The main objective of the movement was land. But those in the movement were told that God would come and take them to that land. Well, for a time this was all right, but no visible means were ever detected by anyone in the movement that would enable us to see that a plan was afoot to make this objective materialize. It caused dissatisfaction. It caused dissension, which eventually developed division. And out of the division, immediately, those who left, out of those who left was formed an authentic religious group known as Muslim Mosque Incorporated, which practiced the religion of Islam as it is practiced and taught in Cairo and Lahore and other parts of the Muslim world. But those who went into the orthodox practice of the Islam religion in the Muslim Mosque Incorporated, at the same time we realized that we were black people in a white society. That we were black people in a racist society. We were black people in a society whose very political system was based and nourished upon racism, whose social system was a racist system, whose economic system was nourished with racism. We were black people who wanted to be religious, who wanted to practice brotherhood and all of that, who wanted to love everybody and all of that too. But at the same time, that was a dream, you know, as my good friend the doctor said. So wanting brotherhood and wanting peace and wanting all these other beautiful things, we had to also face reality and realize that we were in a racist society that was controlled by racists from the federal government right on down to the local government, from the White House right on down to City Hall. Racism was what we were confronted by. So we knew that this was a problem that was beyond religion, and we formed another organization that was non-religious. And this organization was called the Organization of Afro-American Unity, or the OAAU. And we got the idea for it from travels and observation of the success that our brothers on the African continent were having in their struggle for freedom. We're getting free faster than we. They were getting their independence faster than we. They were getting recognition and respect even when they came to this country faster than we. So we had to find out what was happening. How were they doing it and what were they doing? So we could try a little bit of it. On the African continent, the imperialists, the colonial powers had always divided and conquered. They had practiced divide and conquer. And this had kept the people of Africa and Asia from ever coming together. So on the African continent had appeared an organization known as the OAU, or Organization of African Unity. And this had been put together by a group of highly skilled African intellectuals and politicians. And it was designed to make the African heads of state, who had been kept apart and divided from each other by differences, petty differences, personal differences, this organization provided an atmosphere in which these heads of state could submerge their differences and work together in areas where they could agree toward a common objective. And since we in America were confronted with the same divisive tactics from our enemy, we decided to call ours the Organization of Afro-American Unity, which would be designed after the letter and spirit of the Organization of African Unity. In fact, we considered ourselves an offspring of our parent organization on our mother continent. After it was formed, I spent 5 months in the Middle East and Africa, primarily for the purpose of getting better acquainted with them and making them better acquainted with us, giving them a first-hand account of our problem and what our problem actually consists of. When I first got there in July, I found some of them difficult to talk to. But by the time I left in November, I didn't find anybody difficult to talk to. And I might say right here and now that one of the things that made the objective more easily reached was America's identifying herself with Moise Tshombe. Never could a government do anything more suicidal politically than this government's choosing Moise Tshombe as a bed partner in 1964. And the offspring of that adulterous act will be something that they never will be able to put under the rug. By the time I had returned, in last month, the Muslim Mosque Incorporated had received official recognition and support by all of the official religious bodies in the Muslim world, and the Organization of Afro-American Unity had also received recognition and support from all of the African countries where I visited, and most of those where I didn't visit. The first thing I returned, I kept being asked the question by some reporters, we heard you changed. And I would say I was kind to the reporter, actually. I smiled and all. But I would say to myself, how in the world can a white man expect a black man to change before he has changed? How do you expect us to change when you haven't changed? How do you expect us to change when the cause that made us as we are has not been removed? Why, it's infantile, it's immature, adolescent on your part to expect us to change, to expect us to be dumb enough to change when you have not yet gone to the cause of the condition that makes us act as we do. You got the wrong man. It's true, I'm a Muslim, and I believe in brotherhood, and I believe in the brotherhood of all men, but my religion doesn't make me a fool. My religion makes me be against all forms of racism. It keeps me from judging any man by the color of his skin. It teaches me to judge him by his deeds and his conscious behavior. And it teaches me to be for the rights of all human beings, but especially the Afro-American human beings. Because my religion is a natural religion, and the first law of nature is self-preservation. And one of the things that our people have not been doing in this country up until now, we have not been exercising the first law of nature. We have not thought of ourselves first. We have placed America first. We have placed America's interests ahead of our own. We have placed even the interests of whites ahead of our own. We have loved whites when they refused to love us. We have sought to move into their neighborhood when we knew in advance they didn't want us there. We have crawled like animals at the feet of the white man in this country and been rejected. So that today, if you see us step back and get away from you, you can't blame us. You have to blame yourself, or your mother, or your father. You don't want to accept the blame yourself, then put it on your mother and your father. But don't put it on us. So now to get to my talk. About 1965 and the prospects for freedom. in 1964 oppressed people all over the world, in Africa, in Asia, in Latin America, in the Caribbean, made some progress. Northern Rhodesia threw off the yoke of colonialism and became Zambia, was accepted into the United Nations, the Society of Independent Governments. Nyasaland became Malawi, also was accepted into the UN, into the family of independent governments. Zanzibar had a revolution. It threw out the colonialists and their lackeys, and then united with Tanganyika, what is now known as the Republic of Tanzania, which is progress indeed. I was there, one of the most beautiful countries and the best people that I was with. My good friend Abdurrahman Mohammed Babu was one of the architects of the revolution, and I find him to be a most highly enlightened human being and a humanitarian and a lover of freedom. Also in 1964, the oppressed people in the South Vietnam area and that entire South East Asia area were successful in fighting off the agents of imperialism. All the king's horses and all the king's men have enabled them to put North and South Vietnam imperialism. All the king's horses and all the king's men have enabled them to put North and South Vietnam back together again. Little rice farmers, peasants with a rifle and all the weapons of warfare, highly mechanized, jets, napalm, battleships, everything else, and they can't put those rice farmers back where they want them. Somebody's waking up. In the Congo also, the People's Republic of the Congo, headquartered at Stanleyville, fought the war for freedom against Shombi, who was an agent of Western imperialism. And by Western imperialism, I mean that which is headquartered in the United States, in the State Department. In 1964, this government, subsidizing Shombi, the murderer of Lumumba, and Shombi's mercenaries, hired killers from South Africa, along with the former colonial power, Belgium, dropped paratroopers on the people of the Congo, used Cubans that they had trained to drop bombs on the people of the Congo with American-made planes, to no avail. The struggle is still going on, and America's man Shombi is still losing. All of this in 1964. Now, I'm speaking like this, it doesn't mean that I'm anti-American. I'm not. I'm not anti-American or un-American. And I'm not saying that to defend myself, because if I was that, I'd have a right to be that after what America has done to us. This government should be lucky that our people aren't anti-American. They should get down on your hands and knees every morning and thank God that 22 million black people have not become anti-American. Because if anybody has a right to be anti-American, we have. You've given us every right to. And the whole world would side with us if we became anti-American. You know, that's something to think about. But we're not anti-American. But we see we are anti or against what America is doing wrong in other parts of the world as well as his. And what she did in the Congo in 1964 is wrong. It's criminal. Criminal. And what she did to the American public to get the American public to go along with it is criminal. What she's doing in South Vietnam is criminal. She's causing American soldiers to be murdered every day, killed every day, die every day, for no reason at all. That's wrong. Now, you're not supposed to be so blind with patriotism that you can't face reality. Wrong is wrong, no matter who does it or who says it. Now, if I'm anti-American for saying that, then Wayne Morris is anti-American. Church senator from somewhere out there is anti-American. A whole lot of them in Washington, D.C. is anti-American. So I'm just telling you what I read the good senators said. Also in 1964, China exploded her bomb, which was a scientific breakthrough for the oppressed people in China who suffered for a long time. I, for one, was very happy to hear that the great people of China were able to display their scientific advancement, advanced knowledge of science, to the point where a country that is so backward, as this country keeps saying, and so, you know, behind everybody and so poor, could come up with an atomic bomb. Why, I had to marvel at that. It made me realize that poor people can do it as well as rich people. So all of these little advances were made by oppressed people in other parts of the world during 1964. These were tangible gains. And the reason that they were able to make these gains, they realized that power was the magic word. Power against power. Power in defense of freedom is greater than power in behalf of tyranny and oppression. Because power, real power, comes from conviction, and it produces action, uncompromising action. It also produces insurrection against oppression. This is the only way you end oppression, with power. Power never takes a back step, only in the face of more power. Power doesn't back up in the face of a smile, or in the face of a prayer, or in the face of some kind of non-violent, loving action. Power, it's not the nature of power to back up in the face of anything but some more power. And this is what the people have realized in Southeast Asia, in the Congo, in Cuba, in other parts of the world, that power recognizes only power. And all of them who realize this have made gains. Now here in America, it's different. When you compare our strides in 1964 with strides that have been made forward by people elsewhere all over the world, only then can you appreciate the great double cross experienced by black people here in America in 1964. The power structure started the new year out the same way they started that out in Washington the other day, only now they call it, what's that, the Great Society? The Great Society. Last year, this 1964 was supposed to be the year of promise. They opened up the new year in Washington, D.C., and in the City Hall, and in Albany, talking about the year of promise. Promise that black people would make advances in education, we'd get better schools, better school facilities, better teachers, that jobs would open up, there would be less black people in the unemployment line, that in areas of the South where we formerly had not been able to vote, we would be able to register and vote. that we would become socially acceptable to those who in the past did not consider us socially acceptable. But by the end of 1964, we had to agree that instead of the year of promise, instead of these promises materializing, they substituted devices to create the illusion of progress. And 1964 was the year of illusion and delusion. We received nothing but a promise. We received nothing that would actually solve the problems that we were confronted by in January of 1964. In 1963, they had used a trick, one of their devices, to let off the steam of frustration was the March on Washington. They used that to make us think we were making progress. Imagine marching to Washington and getting nothing for it whatsoever. But it shows you how shrewd the power structure is. Manipulate the people through the leaders, as long as the people believe in the leaders. In 63, it was the March on Washington. In 64, what was it? The Civil Rights Bill. Right after they passed the Civil Rights Bill, they murdered a Negro in Georgia and did nothing about it. Murdered two whites and a Negro in Mississippi and did nothing about it. So that the Civil Rights Bill has produced nothing where we're concerned. It was only a valve, a vent, that would enable us, that was designed to enable us to let off our frustration. But the bill itself was not designed to solve our problem. Since we see what they did in 1963 and we saw what they did in 1964, what will they do now in 1965? If the March on Washington was supposed to lessen the explosion, and the Civil Rights Bill was designed to lessen the explosion, it's all it was designed to do. It wasn't designed to solve the problem. It was designed to lessen the explosion. Because everyone in his right mind knows there should have been an explosion. You can't have all those ingredients, those explosive ingredients that exist in Harlem and elsewhere where our people suffer, and not have an explosion. So these are devices to lessen the danger of the explosion, but not designed to remove the material that's going to explode. What will they give us in 1965? I just read where they plan to make a black cabinet member. Yes, they have a new gimmick every year. They're going to take one of their boys, black boys, and put him in the cabinet so he can walk around Washington with a cigar, fire on one end and fool on the other end. And because his immediate personal problem will have been solved, he will be the one to tell our people, look how much progress we're making. I'm in Washington, D.C. I can have tea in the White House. I'm your spokesman. I'm your, you know, your leader. While our people are still living in Harlem in the slums, still receiving the worst form of education and the worst facilities in which to try and educate our children. This is the device that they will use. They'll make a black cabinet member. I read that's one of the gimmicks that they got going. But will it work? Can that one whom they are going to put down there step into the fire and put it out when the flames begin to leap up? When people take to the streets in their explosive mood, will that one that they're going to put in the cabinet be able to go among those people? Or they'll burn him faster than they burn the ones who've been in. At the international level in 1964, up until 1964 and through 1964, what the device that they use, they send well-chosen black representatives to the African continent, whose mission it was to make the people on that continent think that all of our problems had been solved. They went over there as apologists. I saw some of them, trailed some of them, saw the results that some of them had left there. But their prime mission was to go into Africa, which is the most vital country to the United States interest. So these towns, you're not supposed to call them towns nowadays, they're cities. So these uncles were sent over there. Don't bother the man. He's doing his job.